be a pessimist, but if the commander isn't back soon with those reinforcements...
My Padawan will be here!
Master!
Here! I'm here.
Caleb, where are the reinforcements?
Don't worry. They're right behind me.
Where are they?
Caleb?
Trust me.
How many are there?
5 of them.
5? We're done.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But you gotta see these clones. They're different.
There are 10 new Star Wars shows coming out in the next few years. This is the Star Wars Binge, where we not only elevate, order, and discuss the best 40 hours of the Star Wars canon, we also will have a fresh spin on the worthy content being released. My name is Jeff Cook. I'm a philosopher in Greeley, Colorado, and with me in Chicago, Illinois. No!
That's gonna say.
He moved!
That's a point of order, no longer in Chicago, Illinois.
Now in Denver, Colorado, is the Daniel Mothershed, playwright, comedian, and pop culture enthusiast.
That is true. This is the sound of my voice in Denver, Colorado. You can hear the marijuana smoke in the background.
I have realized that people are actually slightly better drivers now in Colorado in the last 5 years because nobody wants to get in trouble. And they're just a little bit more mellow about getting where they need to go.
Yeah. 10 and 2 at the speed limit.
Daniel?
Yes, sir.
The Clone Wars is back.
Yes.
I realize that as we're going through the binge, you haven't actually gotten to the end of the Clone Wars. And so you're getting the Pulp Fiction experience of this sucker.
That's a perfect way to explain it. Yeah. I know what happens at the end, but also the beginning of the end.
Right?
We're all tracking. It makes perfect sense.
We have officially, according to the show, moved from the Clone Wars to a Civil War.
Yes.
First thing we read in the New Hope crawl is it's a time of civil war. Then they set it up in their language here, and I just loved it.
Yeah, the beginnings of the Civil War we kind of get dropped into the middle of in A New Hope.
That's it. Well, dear listener, we're going to talk about 3 big things. Daniel and I have come with our lists of our top 5 things worth talking about, which we'll discuss, and then we'll close the episode talking about 2 big things. First, here are the chess pieces on the board that we all know are on the board that the show creators are grabbing hold of and moving and putting into this story. We're going to talk about the chess pieces. And second, we're just going to speculate. We're going to pull out our crystal ball and talk about all the possibilities moving forward. So you ready to go with this?
Let's do it.
Daniel, what's your number 5 thing we're talking about?
I love that they brought back some really great battle droid humor. Like that's a thing I've really connected with through watching the Clone Wars, and that first big battle with them. There's just some great stellar bits of humor with them where it's just, you know, shouting "Hold your position" as you get shoved out or off of a cliff. So it's just that "Hold your position" as the guy dies. I thought was so good. As they're pushing the tank off the cliff, the thing opens the door, looks at the guy, and just goes, "Hey, stop that!" Like those, and then finally the one guy who sees the commander get shot, and he just goes, "Oh, I guess I'm in charge now." I just thought like those were three really stellar, very hilarious battle droid moments for me.
That aspect of this universe of the galaxy of the Clone Wars, it just brings you right back in.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I'm super familiar. I'm very comfortable here. It's fresh material, but we know where we're at.
The familiarity of those guys immediately sets the place, like sets the scene and the place. Yep. of where this story is. Like it begins in familiar territory.
I agree. Some of the droid humor is paralleled by the droids at the beginning really have not an advantage, but they appear strong. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That first few moments of the show, it looks like things are getting really tight for the clones and R2 Jedi.
Yep. I don't have anything else on battle droid humor.
It's fun.
I thought those were good lines, though.
It's funny.
I'm starting with the intro as well. In the first 40 seconds, I knew I was in good hands. It took me no time at all.
Yeah.
They obviously have the narrator doing the narrator thing, but they're bringing in some fresh imagery from episode 3. They're showing us stuff we've already seen, but they're animating it and making it fresh with the Clone Wars animation style.
Well, and I thought just the last episode of the Clone Wars we have seen was the last arc in season 7 that begins with the blood red Clone Wars logo, and this starts with that.
Yep.
And then immediately burns up to reveal the Bad Batch.
Yep.
And it exactly like you said, I feel like immediately showed you that you're in good hands, but I also feel like immediately says this is something different. Like, we're gonna literally burn this down and tell a whole new story. There will be elements you're familiar with, so you enjoy it, but let us tell you a new story.
Yeah.
And done so quickly and succinctly and masterfully.
Yeah. Moving forward. Alongside this, those first couple minutes show a scene that many of us who have been longtime Star Wars animation fans have known exists, and we've never gotten to see it. And it's the death of Depa Bilaba. The character here, Kanan Jarrus, who is identified as Caleb Doom here. Later on, when he's in Rebels, we'll go by the name Kanan. But Caleb Doom, we've only seen real briefly at the end of Clone Wars as a young Padawan. And here, he's in full action. He's obviously young, and so when he's in danger, we kind of feel it as here are professional soldiers trying to kill a kid.
Right.
We get to see the death of his teacher, and it feels like a mother who is sacrificing herself for the sake of her kid.
Oh, absolutely.
But that image of your parents die and then you go into hiding or you're on the run, man, we could probably name a handful of great characters who have that story, yeah?
I mean, Superman.
Got some Superman at the beginning here.
Yeah.
It's Superman, Batman, Spider-Man. We're all losing some parents. Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, but
I suppose when Anakin Skywalker is going to lose his mom there early on.
Yeah, but there's a... This feels like a specifically sacrificial thing.
Yeah.
Thomas and Martha Wayne, Ben Parker, and these other characters, they are just murdered. Tragically,
yeah.
There's not necessarily a sacrificial element there. There's a they're just taken. Whereas this is specifically like, I am choosing in order to protect this child or child-esque relationship, I am going to sacrifice myself.
Yep. So that you can get away.
Which actually feels very like... I mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi, want to keep it in universe, like he does it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful trope that they're bringing in. It's all over Star Wars. It's all over all these other great fantasies and mythologies, and here it is.
Gandalf, you know, sacrifices himself to the Balrog so the rest, yeah, of the Fellowship can get away.
The wrinkle here is the Bad Batch. I got hyped up.
Same here.
Caleb says there's just 5 clones, and I know what show I'm watching, but it was done with such a clever move to have him slide down, say that, the music kicks in, and then you just see them do their thing. The Bad Batch comes in and just starts wrecking droids.
And at first all you see is kind of the trees rumbling, which is such a great, yeah, Star Wars echo anyways of all the times trees have rumbled and walkers and Imperial forces have lumbered out of the woods. This time it's just these 5 guys and, yeah, and a boulder.
There's some Jurassic Park going on there.
Yeah.
Where you just see the movement of the foliage, as it were. And,
yeah.
And then they're coming.
And then it's all of the Lucas Spielberg properties, because the giant rolling boulder, it's just they're just keeping it all in-house.
And I want to talk about Hunter later, but there was a Hunter line that was another throwback to Indiana Jones, and it was where Caleb Doom had hurtled the gorge. And Crosshair is running down, and Hunter looks at Crosshair, and he says that he stunned him, and he didn't make it. And it reminded me of that scene in Raiders where the boat captain turns to the Nazis and says, "I killed him. He's of no use to us." And then he kind of turns the evildoer's attention elsewhere. And there's something about the character of Hunter that comes out. I think it's really well done, and it's very subtle in terms of how he's protective of Caleb at the beginning. And that creates a huge problem for him and his team, you know, throughout the episode. But there's some inner stuff going on for that, for Hunter and his character as a leader. And I'm super interested. We'll talk more about this, but I found that was just great introductory storytelling that was just real subtle.
Yeah, it sets him up. I noticed several things about Hunter as well. I feel like it sets him up obviously as the leader right away. He clearly is the leader of this group, but it also just shows that he's got heart, I guess, which feels like a very reductive way to explain it, but like he's not just willing to follow orders for the sake of following orders. If something feels wrong to him, such as murder this kid,
yeah,
the struggle there is done so well.
That's exactly right. Boom. Well, what's your number four?
Actually, my point number four I will make based off of what I just said. You can so clearly see the inner thoughts and monologues of these characters. So my number four is the animation of this is just breathtakingly beautiful. Like it's yep. It feels like what we remember from the Clone Wars and the other series, but I feel like it's just been perfected, and it's artwork, and it's just so good to watch. It tells the story and makes the characters come alive so phenomenally.
I agree. My hope is sky high on this front, that it's not as expensive to create these kind of shows, and yet they have dozens of great storytellers who just want to get into Star Wars and tell some Star Wars stories at this quality. And man, I'm all in. All, you know, you want to double my Disney Plus subscription funds to make this go? Let's go.
Yeah.
Charge me the Star Wars premium or whatever. But
Netflix charges us more and gives us absolutely no additional perks. So if Disney Plus wanted to charge us more but give us more stuff, I'm all about that.
But I agree. It's especially those first 5 minutes. It felt like they spent a lot of extra time really wanting to get the details clean.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, just a really beautiful to look at show. Like there were moments where I had to kind of back it up because I was just getting lost looking at everything that was happening and realizing I was missing dialogue, because I was like, wow, look at the way they did the costumes and the characters and even the scenery and settings. Yep. and set dressing. It's like, this is a good looking show.
Agreed. Well, my number four thing we're talking about is the turn of Crosshair. I love that they had the opportunity to set up these characters in season 7 of the Clone Wars. You know who they are, and they just turn this character immediately, you know, and have, it's not just, you know, throwing something in from the side. As we talked about in our pregame episode, all of these characters have the inhibitor chip.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, and how are they going to play that out? And they clearly did. And making it this just one of the five, that's a great move.
Yeah. Instantly creates tension and conflict.
Yeah.
That was done so well. That was one of my big questions when we did the prediction episode was, oh, hey, does the Bad Batch have the inhibitor chips? Did they put those in there? Did they want to waste technology? And within moments, that question was answered. Like, well, it is, but it doesn't really work well. And that's probably what's happening here. How come Echo doesn't have that? Oh, well, he's basically great callback line. He's more machine now than man. That's why his does. They just did it so well.
Yep.
And it didn't feel forced, like they had to come up with a reason. It felt so organic, and it was done so well. And I cheered a little when that answer was given, because I was like, that was the thing I wanted to know.
The turn with Crosshair that I wanted to talk to you about was, we mentioned teams of soldiers, warriors protecting a single female.
Yeah.
That happens in New Hope. We talked about Ninja Turtles. Guardians of the Galaxy. One of the teams that I hadn't thought of was from Schwarzenegger's Predator movie. And there is a ton of Predator imagery with this character. The heat vision is obvious. There's some jungle settings,
yeah,
you know, at times. And it's the team of very skilled warriors. And that's what you see at the beginning of Predator,
mm-hmm,
who are the hunters. One of these characters is named Hunter, but then suddenly he's the hunted. And what happens when there's a turn of that sort? And I love that imagery, that kind of trope being brought in here. That's what I read into the Crosshair character. He's obviously a very unique villain, as it were. Felt a lot like the T-1000 in the second Terminator movie, in terms of just very skinny white guy who can probably move and has more of an assassin mindset. You know, a lot of villains are I'm gonna destroy you, but this is the precision villain.
Yeah, tactical. I mean, well, he's a sniper, so I mean, just that,
yep,
that hyper focus, that precision instrument thing, exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I'm supposed to go back to Predator. That's a lot of the Predator movie. That first movie ends up being the Predator as a sniper. He's got the, you know, he's got the laser sighting on it and it's blowing holes in,
yeah,
future governors of Minnesota.
You mean California?
There are two governors in that movie.
Oh, is Jesse Ventura in that? That's right.
I would quote some Ventura on this, but all of his lines are really unacceptable in 2020.
Yeah. Do you mean Jesse Ventura or Jesse Ventura's character? Because either way, pretty similar problems. The Crosshair turn I thought was done really well, because up until that moment, my only quote-unquote complaint was with him. I was like, okay, you've created these four guys, and they're all really dynamic, mm-hmm, and they're all really, really interesting. And I was finding myself getting slightly uninterested with the Crosshair character, because all he was doing was kind of pouting and being like, good soldiers follow orders. I'm like, okay, great. Not a lot, mm-hmm, going on here. But then the minute Omega sits down to him and says, I know what you're going to do,
mm,
don't do it. And then he does it anyway. I was like, ooh, okay. Now I'm interested in this.
Oh, I can see why you go there. I had the opposite reaction. I was really surprised that they didn't just break up the team immediately. The team was together there for half an hour, you know, mm-hmm, still doing their thing, and they were still at odds with each other. There was still confusion and disagreement and tension, but they continued to work together even through that. I was into that.
I was too. Like, the whole dynamic really worked for me. It was just some of the specific moments where the only things that were given to this character to do were complain and say, I don't like this.
Yeah. No, I hear you on that front.
But from the general storytelling standpoint, it worked really well. Having the it was like they slowly raised up the temperature in the water for the character for his character. So he doesn't like that Hunter is clearly lying about saving the kid, and that bothers him, but he kind of shoves that down.
Yeah.
He doesn't like how they handled the thing on the planet with Saw Gerrera and those guys. And then he doesn't like that they went back for the kid. So it's just getting him to that point of leaving. I thought that worked really well. And that's when it started to get really interesting for me.
Agreed. I never doubt the motive of the villains in this storytelling, the storytelling that's taking place during this time period. I think they established the motives of Tarkin, of all the clones here with Crosshair, very clean. I know exactly what their motive is, and it makes all the sense in the world given their background.
Oh yeah.
Bang. What's your number three?
My number three is, maybe it's just because of what the last several years have looked like, but the willingness to go just steer into, and I believe we talked about the F word in our prediction, yep, episode, but that willingness to steer into what fascism looks like and how, yep, it begins, and how the people who kind of question it and don't seem to buy into it seem to just get immediately eaten up. And how some people who maybe wouldn't right away agree with it, but are like, well, I guess good soldiers follow orders, and they align, yep, with the thing. I just never felt heavy-handed. It just felt like it was upsetting to watch, but you're like, yeah, I can see how that can happen. And it just, the bravery of Disney to do that.
Yep. They used one word that popped for me, and I rewound it, and I was just like, there it is. And it's the word loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
They had Tarkin coming in, talking to the Kaminians, and this is the make or break point. you are loyal to us, and if you say, yes, I'm loyal, then I have you for the rest of time. If you say, no, I'm not loyal, then I'll destroy you right now. And that's how fascism works.
Yeah.
That's how the mob mentality of anything that is has that authoritarian, autocratic foundation works.
Yeah, and just the confidence at which Tarkin breezes around through the halls, and when they're talking about contracts and payments and everything else with the prime minister, and how he was like, well, those contracts were technically with this old thing, yep, not this new thing anymore. And the thing I said was, oh, how interesting. Morally questionable leadership refusing to pay for services and honor contracts is ironic.
I'm changing the deal. Pray I don't change it anymore.
Yeah.
But I hear where you're going there.
Well, I mean, it's pointed, but also it is. You're absolutely right. That is the thing, right? Like, it's these people insist that you must follow the rules, be loyal until the rules, yep, don't work, and then they start to change the rules. And then when those rules, yes, start to not work, they just start to lie.
Yep, that's exactly how fascism works. And when there is when fascism isn't obedient to the truth is whatever our glorious leader says the truth is, and that may change depending on our glorious leader's mood. This is good. This is good. This is good. This is good until it isn't. And we go the complete opposite way because the glorious leader said so.
Yeah.
You see this, actually a good example of this historically is Mao's China.
Mm.
Everything that happens in the 60s is almost an utter reversal of Mao's revolution before. He almost takes like the diametrically opposite kind of views on things. It's autocrats, man.
And just showing how quickly it can happen too.
Yes. And it's all dominoes.
Yeah.
Once you get the toehold, once the autocrat gets the toehold and then begins to leverage it and begins to break down systems, I mean, that's it. You need courageous people to say, here is how reality works. Here is what is good and right. That's why Omega ends up being a fantastic image of that. She is both wise, informed, insightful, and yet youthfully kind of naive. She has goodness of heart, I should actually say.
Yeah, very innocent.
Yeah. Well, to build on your number three, my three was... I love Tarkin's heartless villainy.
Mm-hmm.
Just displayed perfectly. Use live rounds. Increase the mental pressure. You know, what did he say? Can you intensify the programming? It was what he said.
Yeah.
Shut down the clones. They're too expensive. And then he's pulling out dark troopers. Let's see if these guys actually have what it takes. If we kill them, fine, they didn't have what it takes. If they survive, then I know that I have legit weapons to use as I see fit, because that's entirely who Tarkin is. He loves using weapons to get his way.
But then even kind of saying, well, these weapons really worked well, but I also am concerned about this inability to follow the rules that they have, you know, the rules that I change all the time to suit my purpose. So it's, mm-hmm, it was like he saw what he wanted to see, but then also saw that he was right in thinking perhaps they could be problems down the road. So, I mean, he's just...
Yep.
There was a scene where he's talking to the prime minister of Kamino, and who in the Clone Wars, I feel like, is set up to be kind of morally ambiguous and not super interested in doing the right thing. And there's moments where, mm-hmm, where Tarkin is saying things that even this guy is like, wait a minute, that is wrong. It's like, wow, okay, this guy,
right.
Tarkin is so evil. All of these other characters who have shown they're not interested in playing by the rules or being kind, they're questioning him and being like, I think this guy might be a little crazy.
Yeah. I think the Lamassée character there, the Kaminian male, is quickly understanding that his bank account's going to be evaporated here soon.
Yeah.
My golden goose just died.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and
gonna have to find a new trade.
Right. To circle back and maybe to wrap up both these, it was the use of the Imperial probe droid as kind of the spy, the I don't know what you would call this in fascist circles, but it's the gainer of information that is quickly utilized by the autocrat to, you know, to dominate. Like, I'm finding out all the secrets and destroying all potential enemies. And that was the use of the probe droid. That's not how the probe droid's used in Empire Strikes Back. We're just looking for Luke and, you know, I'm trying to find people. But here, it felt much more like 20th century.
Yeah, it was more sinister as opposed to tactical.
That's a good way to put it. Boom. What's your number two?
My number two is one of the things I said I was excited for when we recorded our predictions episode was I just, and we've mentioned it already, but I was just excited and hopeful that this series would feel fun. Like it can have the dark things that Star Wars and great storytelling always has. I just wanted to watch a fun Star Wars series. And this had so much. It had explosions. It had, you know, good droid humor. It had wonderful characters. It had a food fight. Like it had a food fight. It just felt like, yeah, this is fun. This is an adventure series.
I agree. The character that embodied that for me the most is Wrecker.
Yep.
Who routinely comes in as the Shakespearean humor from the Fool on the side, you know. I'm sure that they're setting us up. This might push into our crystal ball section, but I feel like they're setting us up for some heartbreak with Wrecker here at some point, because we're going to love this guy who's always cracking jokes, and it just seems like he's a mountain of a man who couldn't possibly be hurt.
Yeah.
Just saying. But it is. It's a lot of fun. The food fight. They went one layer with the food fight, and then I was like, okay, this is fun. But then they went a second, and then a third layer, and then I was like, wonderful. That's exactly what they should have done.
Yep.
They needed to push this a little harder.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was she starts it, another one of them gets involved, and then they all get involved. Like, it just...
Yep.
And it was just fun. It feels like going on an adventure, and I really enjoyed that. I did also, like you mentioned Wrecker, the sort of I'm not programmed as a machine like everybody else is. I'm an individual person moment with him at that table. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed, had some Guardians of the Galaxy Rocket Raccoon kind of screaming about his programming and what he is and how he didn't want to be some of these other things. I just thought that was a great for a character that could easily be and Hulk. Smash. They did some really interesting things with him.
True. There's a scene which you'll be familiar with in Spielberg's Hook where they unveil a lot of who their character is with the food fight.
Yeah.
And that's what I read into the Omega.
Yeah.
They're actually showing you, not telling you, they're showing you who she is. She's got guts.
Yeah.
She has grown up among soldiers her whole life as a very unique individual in that environment, but she's wise to how the clones work and isn't intimidated at all. And so when she sticks out her chest and is throwing food, she's not naive in that scene. She knows exactly who she is and what she's doing. And her emotional intelligence is going to be her superpower, which was in that crosshair scene. I don't know how far they're going to go. Like, is she an empath where she like has that mutant power to really read people's emotions? Does she have some force abilities where she's actually able to see some of the future? It felt like there was some of that going on with this character. And in the food fight, it's like, I know that these men will come to my aid, to my rescue, will stand beside me. And if they do, then I don't need to worry about anything. You know what I mean?
I agree, and I do know. I also felt like her willingness to begin that fight was because she knew that the people who she was choosing to sit with deserved to be treated better. So it wasn't even like, I'm going to start a fight because I know I got backup. It's, I'm going to start a fight because I ideally, I know that what you did was unkind and wrong, and you should apologize. That's not how you should treat people. Like, just her willingness to, she's so little compared to all these soldiers, but her willingness just to be like, what just happened was bad, and it deserves to be called out as such.
You're exactly right. I only got a chance to watch this once prior to recording, and you're exactly right. As you say that, I'm like, yeah, that was her motive. And that's, again, it's showing you her character.
Absolutely.
Dead opposite of Tarkin.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Great great vocal performance on her as well, I thought, too, on that character.
I didn't look up the voice performance, but I love the really thick, kind of over-the-top Aussie accent.
Michelle Ang is that woman's name, and she is actually... that is her real New Zealand accent. Like, it's not put on. I listened to a really quick 5-minute interview with her, and she was talking, and that is her actual accent.
So I don't know if they're going to do this, but the thing that hit me, and I really wanted, I'm glad that this gets brought up because I didn't know where else to put it. They occasionally put in some bagpipe music in the show. I don't know if you caught this. There was a couple notes.
Oh, no.
That hit in these places where it was like there's a rebellion. And all I was thinking was kind of brave. It brings up some Braveheart. Like a William, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing about like this, when you add the Scottish accent or the Irish accent, especially when it's really thick into British films. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like her Aussie accent was so thick. It was almost like she was outside of, you know, the normal social order, the high order. She's not the bourgeois. You know how that works?
Yeah. I mean,
they're doing this in The Nevers with one of their characters. You know, they do it in lots of films where you have the thicker accent just shows that you're a rural person, you know? You're not part of the social elite if you have a thick accent. And it feels like that's part of her, that's underneath the surface.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure. I just took it at face value, especially having listened to the actress speak. I'm like, oh, she's just from New Zealand and that's the way she talks. But who knows? A lot of Kiwis showing up in the Star Wars universe as of late. Her, Taika Waititi, I'm forgetting the actor's name who played Jango Fett and has gone on to play Boba Fett. But yeah, a lot of that's a great accent.
My number two was my emotional connection to the clones. I was not expecting. We've obviously seen the Siege of Mandalore, but I wasn't expecting to have as much energy pouring into the normal everyday clones as I did. And it really came out when we landed in Kamino and there's two shinies who are carrying a stretcher with a blanket over it and a hand falls out and there was a lightsaber in the hand and it drops to the floor and they just keep going.
Yeah.
And the imagery of the clones being so interested in these shows for the last decade, moving them into that space in my heart and mind, it was routinely unsettling and shocking and a betrayal in some ways. And I know that that's obviously what they're going for. And it just worked for me in terms of they got me there.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. I had a similar moment like that right at the beginning when we see another execution of Order 66.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know that character or her Padawan. Like I have no real basis to be as invested in it as I did, but for whatever reason, the way they did it, I knew it was going to happen. And once it started happening, it just bothered me. I'm like, this is so wrong. Obviously, right? Like it's a mass murder. But, in one of the episodes we did with TJ, we talked about how in episode 3, when we see Order 66 being executed, it's just a bunch of Jedi that we don't really have any connection to, and there's no emotional skin in the game with it because we don't know them. And that was my thinking going into this. But watching this moment, I just thought to myself, I don't know who this is, but this is done so well, and it's so clearly evil and wrong. I am emotionally affected by that, as well as right on with the lightsaber thing too. That hit me.
And I agree. I know nothing about Depa Bilba aside from who she is in the life of a character that becomes really important. And I suppose maybe that part of that, I did read that in. The first time I watched it, I read in the story that I know that that Kanan ends up telling about her and his, and her influence in his life. But there she is. And she was clearly really smart, really mature, doing her job at the highest level, at sacrifice to herself and looking out for these men who turn on her. They spent all of 2 minutes with her in dialogue. Maybe that's, and that's all you needed,
I guess,
to establish connection.
And that's just another great moment. You talked about just feeling for the troopers. And I think you really get to see that where it's suddenly they just turn and they don't really know why. And there's no explanation. And I think it's Hunter who says, these are people we've served alongside of for years and years and years. And now we're just doing this. And it it is unfair. It is unfair for everybody. And you feel for, you feel for even the troopers that are doing it because they can't, they've lost all their autonomy.
Yep. I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point in the binge. There is something about many wars, if not most wars, that is the dehumanization of the soldier, of placing them in spaces where they have to carry out terrible objectives. And that's not, not just my country or your country. I mean, those are all wars at all times.
Yeah.
Like we can judge how the Roman Empire commands Roman soldiers to do this brutal thing. And that's dehumanizing to the soldier, not just to the victims of their works, their violence. Just spot on right here.
Yeah. Done very well. And so simply, that's, I feel like that's one of the things we keep coming back to is just the, this is only a 75 minute episode. And they're able to achieve these things so quickly and so well in doing so little.
Yeah. It's, it is one of the great elements. And we're seeing this with Marvel as well right now. When you have built a universe with solid pillars and real emotional connections with your audience, you can just put people into that universe and start things fairly fast.
Yeah.
And then you're moving and everybody's just with you. You didn't have to tell them, oh, by the way, this is how the world works.
Right. Yes. We already know and we're already interested. And the things that maybe you're not going to explain to us right away, they're done in a way that feels like, please continue viewing our story, as opposed to, yes, we just threw this in here and we didn't really have an explanation for it. And all of a sudden, Martha Wayne is Martian Manhunter. Wait, what? Why?
All right, what's your number one?
My number one is, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. I just wrote down the character of Hunter.
That's my number one as
Perfect.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah, it's,
let's talk about it.
And literally all I wrote is like, new favorite Star Wars character? Question mark.
Yeah.
There's just, there's something about this character and it's his willingness to question Order 66, his willingness to kind of say, you know, this doesn't begin to explain things just because they're orders and just that's because we're what we're told. Why are we going to do this? Because it just feels wrong. Like it just seems like you have a character who's clearly a hunter, a super soldier, who also just has a lot of heart and just goodness.
Yeah. Great films need a movie star sometimes. And I didn't really, I went in this whole time thinking this is a team, this is a team, this is a team, which it is, but they have a movie star is what hit me. This is a unique character. He's kind of similar to Din Djarin, I think. I mean, you might be able to make some comparisons, but I think Hunter ends up just being a unique character. I can't think of anyone else in Star Wars that is this guy. Maybe similar to Rex, but I imagine we're going to see the contrast here real soon.
I thought the same thing actually in watching it. I was like, I wrote down there's some Rex qualities in him, just in Rex's loyalty to Ahsoka and how much he clearly cares for her, and that balance of like, I've been literally created to be a soldier my entire life, and now I'm uncertain with what to do. With the war around me either ending or being fought in a way that I feel like is not honorable.
We haven't gotten to see this character in the binge yet, but Hunter, I think, might be the doppelganger of Thrawn. They are real similar in my mind, both highly observant. That apparently is his superpower. And that's who Thrawn is. Thrawn is, I understand everything that's going on and am playing a chess match. And I got that sense with Hunter that he understands everything that's going on, very empirical, definitely a tacticianer, is leading his crew, really needs to utilize his crew in order to survive. But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make these two foils for each other.
That'd be super interesting.
But I suppose it's the case that, you know, another tacticianer who is clearly in this show, you know, is Tarkin.
Yeah.
And maybe a different kind of foil there.
Yeah.
Boom. I'm glad that that hit you because that was unexpected for me.
Same. Yeah.
Let's talk about the chessboard, eh?
Let's do it.
We had talked about this in our pregame for the Bad Batch, that there are all kinds of characters who we've already been introduced to that we care about, who are out there in this galaxy far, far away, and their stories matter, and they have, you know, lots to add if, you know, if they come into contact with the story that they're telling through the Bad Batch. And a handful of them obviously got brought in. We already talked about Kanan Jarrus and Depa Bilaba, who they brought in. We talked a little bit about let's pause there. Was there anything else worth saying about Kanan and that is here? He's Caleb Doom. He changes his name later. Caleb Doom is the young Jedi at the beginning of the show. Anything worth saying about these two?
I will be very interested when we get into Rebels to see him.
Yeah.
Having seen him as a kid first, and already as a kid, he's clearly he's brave and he's yep. tough, and he's got a very developed sense of justice, clearly, and right and wrong, and but also clearly skilled. He's a little kid. He jumps across a ravine to safety. Yep. So clearly worth paying attention to. Obviously, if you reverse engineer the story the way I'm doing it, you're like, oh, pay attention to that kid. He could be somebody. Because he is.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if they bring him back in. They, I think, really wanted to establish the connection between he and Wrecker at one moment. Like, Wrecker has an emotional connection with him where he's like, I really like this kid. And so I don't think there's any reason to sleep on him. I bet you they might come back around, especially if it's the case that Crosshair feels like it's his duty to go kill that Jedi.
Or if you flip it, if he feels like it's his duty to go kill these clones.
Ooh, gosh, I like that. And everybody's hunting everybody.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
Another set of characters that are on the chessboard are the Kaminians. And there is a clear difference. I loved this move. It was real subtle at the end of the episode where the female shows that she actually cares about Omega. And there's a disconnect between those two. They're so sterile most of the time, and they're heartlessly proper.
Yeah.
Through nearly every story. And she showcases just a tinge of heart.
And even him, when she comes in at the end and is like, there was a problem and she got away and whatever, and his willingness to say, and maybe I'm misreading it, but his willingness to kind of be like, well, why don't we just kind of keep that close to the vest?
Yeah.
Right. To just look aside from it.
Yep. A third character that's on the chessboard, which who we knew was going to appear, is Tarkin.
Yeah.
He was part of all the promotion. They did a novel on Tarkin. Tarkin appears a handful of times in the Clone Wars, which we're going to cover those episodes in the binge. And obviously, Tarkin is a huge character in New Hope. Wait, any fresh thoughts on that we didn't already talk about in terms of what this character brings to this show?
My initial thought as I was watching, thinking about Tarkin and watching this was like, oh, this is, so many of these guys in Star Wars just feel like older men who are in high ranking positions in the military who have mm-hmm. been there for forever. And they're basically like, they punch in, they punch out, they go home. This isn't whatever. And maybe because of his age, I'm not sure. It's very easy for me to think that about Tarkin mm-hmm. until you realize, I think TJ pointed this out on one of the episodes he joined us where he said, this is the guy who can tell Darth Vader what to do. And Darth Vader right. backs down from it. You know what I mean? It's not like, well, fine, but I'll get you one day. Yeah. It's like Vader is quick to mind Tarkin. And I'm very excited to see. I love Peter Cushing's, the actor who played him in the film. I think he's a great, great British actor. But I'm very interested to see what they can do with a younger version of the character to, in the same way I've talked about Boba Fett and Darth Maul and some of these other characters who we didn't get to see do a ton in the films, but we know there's some weighty history there. I'm really excited to see Grand Moff Tarkin show us why the word grand is in his name. You know what I mean? Like, just to kind of bring, because he's clearly evil. Look at his hair.
I suppose the movie I didn't mention and who he appears in a lot of it is Rogue One. And we get to see how deaf he is at being a politician in this structure.
Yeah.
This is a dude who's just made for advancement
in
the Empire.
Ruthless advancement too. Like it's there's a lot there.
Yeah, there you go. Last character. No, there's two more that I got. A character that we haven't seen in the binge yet because he only appears in season 6 is one AZI-3, who is the medical droid. Different kind of droid humor going on with this character.
Yeah, very.
Got some buffoonery going on.
He reminded me of like a David Ogden Steers character in MASH, or even him as the voice of Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast. Just
sure.
Kind of sweet and good-natured and bumbling.
Yep. For me, because he's part of a very important arc in season 6, when they killed this droid, I assume he got killed. I don't know if he got the zap that came out was a stun zap. It was the blue circle, but he looked like he died.
Yeah, he looked pretty still.
That was shocking to me because smoke's coming up. Because he's the comic relief. Bang, and you're like, oh. and especially because it wasn't just a character that you were introduced to for 2 minutes and then they killed him off. This character was actually fairly primary in a very important arc. And here they kill him off. And I think it's one that's a great move because they might not be coming back to Kamino.
Right.
And so you don't need to hold on to him. Like he's definitely expendable. But man, that's a great use of a chess piece, you know?
Well, especially because the last thing we saw him do was exhibit a lot of joy and excitement about doing something. And to just further play into our continual political platform on this podcast, droids are people. They have feelings.
It's because they're not actual human beings that the show creators can be really violent towards droids, and we feel it emotionally, but it's different than like a kid getting shot or something.
Yes, absolutely.
The last chess piece, and we didn't mention this in the pregame, and I kick myself, is John Williams' music.
I know. There was a
point real early on, and they cue and drop the Imperial March, and I was like, gah, here we are. We're home, baby.
And even using Ian McDermott's audio as Palpatine.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, just because he's so good, you know, vocally, his performance. And then, coupling it with that John Williams music, it was just like, I felt the dread just sitting watching it. I was like, oh, no, it's happened.
It's happened.
Speaking of chess pieces, if unless you had more to say on the John Williams music.
I don't know. Do it.
We do also briefly get to see one other character we've seen before.
Remind me.
We see Saw Gerrera.
Oh, yeah. I didn't write. Talk about it.
I thought that was. I know we had talked about him in our predictions episode. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's feasible that he could show up sometime. Did not expect him to show up in episode 1 of the series. But, oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Kind of a pre battle fatigued Saw Gerrera, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, he's the first person to really say the phrase, now it's a civil war.
Yep. Early adopter.
Yeah.
The thing about Gerrera here, and perhaps in Rogue One as well, is he understands so much. May not be a trustworthy person, but he certainly gets it.
Yeah.
Lots of Vietnam in that scene. They're in the jungle. You know, it's almost like there's these civilians that are part of the movement. And I found that unsettling.
Yes, I know. The minute you see elderly women and children.
Yep.
And then with that mission even too, that's when I think you really know. And that's when for almost all of the batch, they go, you see that be the breaking point from them, of them realizing this is wrong.
Right.
This is, what are we doing? What have we been asked to do?
Yeah, that's good. We're going to see a lot more of Saul Guerrera, both in the binge. He appears both in Rebels and in Clone Wars, and there's worthy stuff there. And a lot of foundational stuff, because he talks about losing people in his life and how that's affecting his choices and how difficult it is. And we'll get a chance to see all that.
Oh, great.
One last little bit, just speaking of the music, I suppose, to circle back, was I didn't realize how much I had internalized the Bad Batch theme in season 7 of the Clone Wars. When they brought it into play here as kind of the hero medley, you know, when these five characters are really doing their thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it gets elevated, man, my heart just kind of soared the way that I would with the Lord of the Rings theme, the Fellowship theme,
yeah,
or even the Force theme.
Yeah, no, totally. It's
the Avengers theme. That's what it, you know, when that kicks in.
I know exactly.
You're just like, oh.
just briefly to speak on that, I got to go to for the 80 years of Marvel. There's a big touring exhibit that gets done, and throughout most of it, in different places of it, the Avengers theme plays. And I had the most like visceral reaction in this museum the minute you walk in and hear that Avengers main theme, where you're just like, oh, this is going to be good.
Top five moment in the MCU for me is almost entirely the work of the Marvel theme. Or the Avengers theme, when Captain America steps out of the shadows at the beginning of Infinity War and the Avengers theme kicks in. Just gives me tingles.
The theater that when my brother and I went and saw that, the theater that we were in erupted.
Yeah.
Much as it did in Endgame when T'Challa and everybody are the first group of people to come out of the portals and then on from there and then to ending with Captain America summoning the hammer and saying Avengers Assemble, and the music blasts as well there too. You're just like,
Those are such a delight to go to on YouTube.
Yep.
People who had been filming the first showings, and it's not they're filming it because they want to show the bootleg to their pal, but now they're uploading it because notice the reaction of this crowd.
Well, they used it in the Marvel just put out that Phase 4 teaser.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I believe. And there's
I sure didn't cry five times through that.
Oh yeah, me neither. I was just stone
just
cold
eye.
Through the whole thing. No, because the music that they play and Stan Lee's voiceover of him talking about, you know, like that woman over there is your sister, that person over there is your but
family.
Yeah. When they get to the moment where they show the footage from the opening night of Endgame, man, that's when it really hit me, because you're just like, wow.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's in there.
I've totally forgot about that. That's why it's fresh in my mind right now. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that was just it. Those elements of storytelling mean to people. It's cool.
So true. All right, you got any predictions moving forward? We'll get to our crystal ball section here to close.
Yeah. Not too many. I guess they're more questions than predictions, but I guess I can phrase them in a way that sounds predictive. I'm very curious to know who they're going to see, mm-hmm. who they're going to find. And my two thoughts, I know they know Rex, and part of me wonders if they're going to find him,
mm-hmm.
or if they're going to find Cut Laquane, because I don't actually have any reason for thinking that other than I would really like to see that character again, because that's also such an interesting piece.
That was the you may have looked this up like I did, but the Easter egg there at the end of saying this is where we're headed. We're headed to J-19.
Oh, did you go look? I didn't.
I did. Oh, okay. Dude, was that seriously your guess?
Yeah.
You're just on point. Because, okay, so dear listener, we just did our deep dive into the Deserter episode in the Clone Wars, which has a character named Cut Laquane, who is, as you can tell, a deserter from the Grand Army of the Republic. Say it were the case that Rex was on the run. Say it was the case that Rex knew nowhere else to go and needed one friend who kind of owed him and could actually take care of him and his friends. Cut Laquane is a great option. He knows exactly where Cut is. He's been hiding from the Republic for years.
Yeah.
And there you go.
I guess I didn't even think about the possibility of Rex being with him as well. I had thought of him as a one or the other thing. Rex, just because I know that the Bad Batch has worked with Rex and kind of seen his character. And then I thought of Cut only because I was like, well, who else has opted out of this thing?
Yeah.
Like they're about to do. So those were my only two. Those were my only two real predictions for that. I'm very excited to see. I guess you could also go further and predict, say, well, they've met Saw Gerrera and know there's about to be this civil war. So I wonder if they become your sort of Suicide Squad-esque thing for the civil war side of the Republic, where it's like, all right, go break into that base.
Yeah. I got thoughts on Saw here in a second, but the only reason I bring up Rex is because he was in the trailer. So if you have Rex in the trailer and you're like, how are they going to come into contact with each other? I suppose that was where my mind was going.
I totally forgot about that.
In theory, and this will be exciting for those of us who love the character. Last time we saw Rex, he was with Ahsoka. And so there may be, unless they have somehow split up, and they need to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a split up at some point, from what we know in Rebels. So that's going to be part of the story. But they didn't get a chance to tell it yet. They were together last time we saw them.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That'll be interesting.
So, bang. Here's my theory on Saul Guerrera. You'll know this from the first season of The Mandalorian. They show you those Mandalorian who are underneath the city. They're in the sewers.
Yeah.
You know? And they kind of just, they show you that they're there. And then a couple episodes later, there's deep peril. You know, Din Djarin's not getting out. And then all of a sudden, those dudes come flying in. Epic scene.
Yeah.
I think that is my favorite scene right now, with the exception of Grogu stopping the fire. In The Mandalorian. I just love that scene. The music and everything of him being rescued by people who don't like him, but they are followers of the way. It's just beautiful, I think.
Agreed.
I think that's what they're doing. I think that's what they're doing with Saul Guerrera. Is they're showing you that he's there. They're showing you he has power. They're showing you that they acknowledge they're on the same team. And don't be surprised that in a couple episodes, when the Bad Batch is in one of those situations they just can't get out of, here comes Saul and his pals to save the day.
Yeah, I like that.
Bang, you got any more prognostications?
No, that's kind of it, really.
The only other one that I had, and it was a great plant, was that Omega was called a medical assistant right up front. And I think that's, you need to know that because she is going to be the primary one who's able to take out inhibitor chips. And they just planted that.
Ooh.
And it's there, and they didn't even focus on it at all. But because she's a medical assistant, she is very familiar, I assume, with clone anatomy. And she's going to be the key to to getting these chips out if they decide to go down that road. Of saving clones.
I didn't even think about that. That's incredible.
Come on. That was a good one, huh?
I would love that.
The other one that I loved, this is just about Omega. It doesn't reference anything else, but she picks up the blaster and shoots Crosshair.
Twice.
And Hunter says, "How'd you learn that?" And she goes, I don't know. It's just luck. One, as we know, there's no such thing as luck in Star Wars. But I hear Fives yelling at the recruits. We're one heart. Same heart, same blood. And your training is in your blood. And that's what I saw there with her picking up the blaster is. I mean, was it stated decisively that she's a clone who's she's a mutant. I suppose they did say that.
Yeah, she's a mutated clone. Echo says it.
Okay.
Echo says it to all of them when they're leaving older Anne.
Right. I'll find that and put it in.
Because I was on the fence too. I was like, is it? I think it feels like she's probably, I don't know. And then when finally he was like, oh, I assume, when even Echo even has the line, oh, I assumed it was obvious. It's like, well, I,
oh. Oh, that's right. I do remember that now.
Yeah, I thought it was two. And then I second guessed myself, pal. Sorry. I'm not a supercomputer guy now.
I wouldn't be surprised. Here's my last prognostication. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they held off most of the main characters from this season. I think they'll have three or four arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to just save everybody and just let you really sit with these characters. I imagine Crosshair will get redeemed at some point that seems like that would be likely because he'll be hunting them and that'll be a big part of the story, but that's going to build the connection we have with the characters, their care for each other.
Yeah.
I'm sure is going to come out. And, that's a great way to start this new series.
Yeah, no, this was an excellent first episode and an excellent first dive into this world. And it was, I'd have to go back and re-listen to our predictions episode, but I feel like a lot of the things we said we hoped to see,
yeah,
I feel like we got to see.
Yeah, true. Oh, there was one last prognostication, but I don't know how they're going to do this, but eventually they're going to have to start killing off clones and they're going to have to start bringing in stormtroopers. I don't know what that looks like, but I imagine that's both going to be heartbreaking and it'll be really important part of their story, you know?
Yeah. And well, and the groundwork for that has already kind of been laid in Tarkin saying, we don't need any more of these clones. We can do it with recruiting soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Fascism and genocide go together often.
Yes. Like the world's the most lethal peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That's how they go together.
I mean, that's where the path leads, my friend. That's why you oppose autocrats from the beginning, and when they ask you for loyalty, you can say something from the R2-D2 catalog of responses.
And just again, thank God this show is clearly a work of fiction, and nothing horrible like this has happened in, say, the last few months.
Loyalty tests, brother. All right. Well, we'll pick this up. If this works and people listen to it, and if you are listening to this, hit us up on Twitter on your thoughts. We need to know whether or not response podcasts of this sort are worthwhile. So let us know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We're easy to find on Twitter at Star Wars Binge. And normally I have a handful of things to say, but I haven't ever prepped the exit of one of these podcasts. You got anything before we go?
No, just that I'm really excited. I'm just excited for new stories in the Star Wars universe.
Truth. Friends, it would mean the world to us if you gave us some stars on iTunes, if you would subscribe on any platform that you choose. But the biggest, best thing you could do is just share this with a person that you care about, with just one person. Send it to one person you care about. It means the world to us, and it's really the only way that podcasts like ours get any traction at all. So if you enjoyed this, help us out. Otherwise, that's what I got. You got anything else? I guess I already asked that, didn't I?
No, just even less now.
He's Daniel Mothershed. Your training is in your blood.
I was about to be
that's all I got on my sheet.
I wasn't sure what was happening, and I was about to be like, and he's Jeff Cook?
And I'm Jeff Cook.
They're different.
Sometimes you don't prep very well, but sometimes you're supposed to. And you want to know why, Daniel?
Because this is the way?
This is the way.
Because this is the way.
Also, to be fair, this came out this morning, so I think we're doing pretty good.
Good. Only 1 hour 20. I'll be able to cut that.
Perfect.
Down pretty quick.
Is that it? Holy crap. Yeah.